The content found on thebestdayever.com from David Wolf and New Horizon Health, Inc. is for informational purposes only and is in no way intended as medical advice, as a substitute for medical counseling, or as treatment cure for any disease or health condition, and nor should it be construed as such because that would be illegal. Always work with a qualified health professional before making any changes to your diet, supplement use, prescription drug use, lifestyle, or exercise activities. Please understand that you assume all risks from the use, non-use, or misuse of this information.
Hello, everyone, and thanks so much for tuning in. Today I'm here with Nadine Artemis, a great friend of mine, a speaker at our Longevity Now conferences, our Women Wellness conferences, and we're going to dive deep into the topic of having healthy skin for babies. Nadine, welcome so much. Thanks for being on the call.
Oh, thank you so much for having me. It's always a pleasure.
Okay, great. So let's go ahead and dive right in. One of the biggest issues that moms deal with respect to their babies is diaper rash. How can we avoid this?
Well, one thing it's not always convenient, but it's really great when you can get the air and the sun on your little baby's bottom. So if that's not possible, even allowing, you know, the baby to be in the house diaper free, and really you don't have to worry even if they're not toilet trained or anything, it's actually a good way that you can start the communication of toilet training. You can have a bowl nearby, a little potty nearby. So that helps too. So air and sun is really the best. You might want to look at the diapers you're using. And also when teething comes up, that's often when a baby gets a diaper rash. So know that they often go together, and sometimes it can be the pre-signal that teething is coming. A couple of sleepless nights might be coming up. And then to create that protective barrier that you hear maybe advertised a lot with different skin things, it's really not that difficult. You can just use organic olive oil or virgin coconut oil or a combo of both. You just melt down the coconut oil, pour in some olive oil, and just have that in the, you know, where you're taking care of your baby, changing the diapers. The other thing is, like, don't clean them with soap. Bath time is really about, you know, having a bath and the experience of it and getting wet, but you don't need to use soap. And I have found that the best way to care for a baby's bum is with olive oil, or I happen to use our Sea Bucks or Ambeskin ever. I cut up an old flannel blanket, and I cut it into like little squares, like the size of toilet paper squares. And I had a bunch of those ready. And then when it came time to clean, I just put a little squirt of water on those little squares and a squirt of the Ambeskin ever, or you can use olive oil. And then that's what's going to wipe away the baby's bum. But when you start getting into even those eco diaper wipes and that kind of thing, if you're using them a lot, that's going to be drying and irritating to the skin over time.
Could you talk a little bit more about this relationship between teething and diaper rash?
You might get a rash around the face. There's often diarrhea, a diaper rash. So the body kind of gets inflamed and irritated, and sometimes the immune system goes down. And was it Hal Huggins? Yes, Hal Huggins, who I'm so excited will be at the Longevity Now conference. He is definitely like, you know, a dental hero for me. And I think there's been a few, but he's still alive. And this is so awesome that his wisdom keeps growing. And, you know, he's been really enlightening us for 40 years about our teeth. And so it's awesome. But he has a great, really interesting book. It's not in print anymore, but I just loved it. It really opened up a lot of things for me. And it was called Why Raise Ugly Kids? And there's a couple of amazing chapters in there that also introduced me to the dentist that taught him about the dentineal fluid, the lymph system that's in the teeth. And what he also talked about was the lowering of vitamin C content and phosphorus content of your little baby when the teething happens. So a great way to combat some of the issues with teething is amping up vitamin C for your baby, and that will prevent some of the side effects. And because there's so much going on that it's often a time when your baby will get a cold or a fever with teething.
Okay, so if you're breastfeeding, you yourself would amp up the consumption of vitamin C on your end, and then if you have introduced solid foods at that point, in addition to breastfeeding, you can be making sure that your baby is eating foods that have high levels of vitamin C concentrated in those foods. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, and Yeah, absolutely. And it can be things like camu berry powder, and then or later when they can eat honey if they're a little bit older. And so you can disguise the camu in that, or acerola cherry is also good because it's not as bitter. So just really concentrated C is awesome. And, you know, there are homeopathic remedies work, and also essential oils. You can use things like lavender and chamomile on the cheeks and on the jaw area, and that's anti-inflammatory as well.
Essentially, there's this relationship between the teeth and what's occurring in the body, and it's like causing inflammation, and so that's what can cause things like the diaper rash to flare up and things of that nature. So by working on what we're putting in the baby's body, it can help mitigate things like diaper rash, which is really just, would you say, not only irritation caused on the outside of the body, but also demonstrative of something that's occurring inside the body.
Yes, exactly. And also, the good time to mention probiotics, because, I mean, they're so awesome. So if the mother ingests a lot of probiotics, which is just great at that time and being pregnant anyway, then that will also help your baby. Or again, if the baby is eating other things right now, then you can easily put probiotics in a spoonful of anything. You can even mix it with breast milk and have the baby ingest the probiotics that way.
Okay, so with respect to diaper rash, the primary things are getting some sun, airing things out down there, letting the baby be diaper free for a little bit, making sure then that if there's some irritation occurring on the skin, using things like olive oil. One of the things I use is the sea buckthorn as well. And I also use the Jive baby oil. And can you talk about why that particular product is so effective in terms of really nourishing a baby's skin in general and maybe diaper rash in particular?
Yeah, well, both the sea buckthorn best skin ever and the Jive baby oil, they're so nourishing because, well, first of all, they're just natural. And jojoba makes a great water barrier. It's actually a liquid wax, a plant wax, instead of an oil. And that there's virgin coconut oil in both of them. And then there's some essential oils and herbs, which also helps. And I found if we ever did have an irritation, it was around teething, and we would do the air, and we put that on, the sea buckthorn on, and it would just be, it would be gone in an hour. So we never had to really suffer from that discomfort. And then it depends too, like, so then there's inside the body. So if they have diarrhea, or if the pee is a little less alkaline, that's sort of where the inside of the body's giving the messages, then, you know, those are signals too. And this, so you can just like alkalinize the mother's milk by, and probiotics and vitamin C. And that will also take care of, you know, the teething or the diaper rash. Like, it's all connected.
Okay, let's take a look at the other end of the spectrum, which is the head area. And a lot of mothers have written into us saying they have issues with what's called cradle cap. So can you maybe talk about what that is and the best way to handle it?
Yeah, sometimes that comes because the fontanelle in the head is growing and that soft spot is changing in the head. Other things, I mean, you know, you really, things that can irritate it is like we have this, there's this sort of message out there of how we're supposed to take care of our babies. And, you know, you may go to a shower and then you get this basket of like powder and creams and lotions and all this stuff. And really so much of it is not necessary. I mean, if I feel like you could take care of your baby with just like an oil, like olive oil, or to like the best skin ever, just like an oil and water, and like everything could be handled. Those are the basics. So, you know, your child, they don't need their head shampooed and they, you know, every day or every week. And we didn't wash Leaf's hair until he was about two. And to this day, we wash his hair once a year, maybe. I think he's like had his hair washed like three times in his life, and he's five. And we have amazing shampoo. So it's not even like a question of good, you know, of non-toxic shampoo. It's just not necessary because you're letting the scalp breathe, you're letting the oils flow, and it's a habit that you don't have to start. I mean, I'm not sure what'll happen as he gets older or when he's a teenager, but for now it's fine. And you wouldn't know his head has never, you know, hardly been washed. It smells great. It's clean. The hair is healthy. So, there's sort of like undoing the way that we've learned to care for our babies. So you don't want to be putting products in the baby. And then the best thing to do is just, again, with an oil, again, the olive oil, you can add some lavender to that, or use the Jai Baby or the Beskin Ever, and just massage that oil into the scalp, and that really helps. And then internally, more probiotics, you know, through the breast milk, or if the baby's old enough, giving it directly to the baby.
Let's talk about this misconception of having to wash a baby's hair a lot, and also the products that are typically used to do so. What is a general rule of thumb? If you see, for example, more than 4 ingredients listed on a bottle, should you just run from that product?
Well, yeah, you could run. I mean, some of my products have a lot in them because I'm also infusing herbs that I think are really beneficial into jojoba, and then we're allowing that to be a part of the juiciness of the product. So, I mean, that could be a way to look at it. I mean, definitely, if you can't pronounce the products,
right,
and it's not just their Latin name, it's like acetyl sterile alcohol or sodium lauryl sulfate, like those kind of words, totally run. Just run far. And we can have everything we want in a beauty product without anything like that into it, anything in it. You know, we can have clean, healthy hair, and we can have beautiful skin without any of those petroleum and synthetic derivatives. And our little babies, they absorb so much more. So a dose of shampoo, I mean, when we wash our hair with regular shampoo, we get more nitrates into our system than eating a pound of bacon. So the babies are so tiny. You want to keep it as pure as possible.
Can you talk a little bit about the soaps that are out there and why they could actually be irritating a baby's skin?
Yeah, well, the chemicals in it, like the sodium lauryl sulfate and all that, they can totally irritate the skin and do cause things like eczema. But also, they also have like gender-bending effects, which you don't want. The phthalates, the parabens, all of this is sending messages into the body, and the hormone receptors are picking that up, you know, and it's really a serious issue. And then it's compounded because it's not like the only thing that has parabens or phthalates in it. We've got issues with plastic. It could be the flooring, the bedding, you know, so we're like, you've got to eliminate it where you can. And it's so easy with soap and shampoo because there's options. So it's very important. And really, if you put some salt and baking soda in the water, that's very cleansing too.
I just want to point out as well that for those of you who are bathing your babies, please also consider your water source. And if you are using tap water, say you're giving them a bath or something, think about how you can mitigate some of the stuff that's coming in through the tap water, like chlorine and things like that, with the skin being the largest eliminative organ in the body and having this ability to absorb whatever it's being exposed to, consider the effect that might be having on your baby or your child, your toddler. And one of the things that we do is we put in a detox bath ball, which gets rid of a lot of that stuff, let it sit in the bath for a little bit while the water cools down as well, and then we bathe our baby, knowing that we've gotten rid of, eliminated a lot of the junk that comes in through the tap water.
Yeah, we want to set them up for a successful, healthy life.
So you had mentioned eczema briefly. Can you address that specifically now? What could be some causes why it's arising? What's the best way to address this? And anything maybe you shouldn't do?
Well, some of the stuff we've already touched on, like tap water, like regular municipal tap water, should be filtered. You don't want to use soap. Also, laundry soap and how the laundry is being done is a consideration as well. So you just want to get unscented eco soap. And you can always add your own essential oils, but the stuff that's used isn't high quality, and it may not be real. Even in the health food store, you have to be very discerning about the laundry products that you're getting. And you don't want to use dryer sheets or anything like that. So that all has to be thought about if there is eczema. And then again, probiotics are key. And that could be, you know, again, the mother. It's such a great time for the mother to be taking a ton of probiotics anyway. And so that could be, it could just be, because, you know, eczema is a fungal issue. Really, at the end of the day, it's manifesting in the skin, but it's a fungal issue. Sometimes it can be a reaction to vaccines, And, you know, if that's the case, I would definitely look up the work of Donna Gates, and also Dr. Natasha Campbell McBride has done a lot of work on that, because she had an autistic child, and it's all about the guts. And so that's an extreme example, but sometimes that is what is happening when a child gets eczema. And then the other thing to look at is just like things that the mother is eating, the child could have a food sensitivity to. So always good to do anyway. You want to look at wheat, gluten, soy, different grains. You know, are you soaking your grains? But if you are breastfeeding, then the eczema could be a part of something that you're eating that your child might be sensitive to. And if it is a problem, again, something like the sea buckthorn and the Beskan ever is amazing. You can use a little lavender tea tree as well, along with an oil, and that helps it. Sometimes that's enough. Sometimes that makes it go away, because you're transdermally applying antifungal botanicals. But sometimes we need to go a bit deeper.
Going back to the laundry for a moment, I think that's really important. And I was just curious as to what essential oils maybe you personally would recommend to add to if you're using unscented.
There's so many fun options. You can be, you know, lovely lavender, lemongrass, citruses are very inexpensive and are always cheery. So something like orange, grapefruit, lemon. I also am a big fan of like firs, because that always smells good for laundry. So balsam fir, Douglas fir is great, eucalyptus. Those are all some of my favorite cleaning oils.
Mm-hmm. And can you talk about like a couple of ways that laundry determined that claims to be eco-friendly or natural, some key phrases to look for on the labeling that might be disguising harmful chemicals?
Oh, that's a good question. Coconut derived, those are all kind of BS. Fragrance, just that word fragrance, you could see that in a health food store brand as well, because that's not real. And you don't need as much soap as anybody says. And there's also the soap nuts and things like that. But you just need a tiny bit.
The real smell of things as opposed to, like, fake fragrances. I've noticed that you can smell something and tell that it's synthetic or chemical.
Oh, yeah, right away.
And relying on your own senses, like, you know what, this smells synthetic and chemical to me, and then not using it.
Well, smell is like, it's there for that. It's to warn us of poisons and danger. So when we, you know, shed some of the advertising and some of the things we've been taught, and you allow that sense to work for you, it's definitely, you know, there to help you out.
Yeah, I'll just share a quick story. My stepmother bought one of those, you know, natural, non-synthetic chemical laundry detergents to wash our clothes because, well, she started off using Tide, okay? That's where she started and educated her. And so she said, all right, I went out and I bought this natural, you know, non-synthetic stuff. And then I opened the cap and I took a whiff and I said, no, this still has chemicals in it. And so I really think, you know, what Nadine's saying, we really have to pay careful attention to, even if it says natural, even if it says green, really be diligent on checking the list of ingredients there. And if you see the word fragrance, be careful. Really check it out. Take a whiff. And remember that whatever you're dumping on the clothes, especially your baby's clothes, those clothes are going to go on the baby's body, and your baby's going to be smelling that scent. Your baby's going to be exposed to those chemicals. And again, these all seem like little things, but as you begin to stack them up one on top of another, the tap water, the chemicals that we're bathing our babies in, and now the clothes that we're putting on their bodies that they're wearing all day, they start to stack up and problems can arise as a result. So it's just something, you know, to think about and look at where we can begin to be making better, more informed choices.
The word fragrance on a label can contain up to 1,000 ingredients.
Okay, so let's take a look at how much sun is good for our little ones. Under a year, over a year, and then what are the best things to use on the skin if our babies are going to be out in the sun for extended periods of time?
Yeah, it's a great question because there's a lot of covering up of our toddlers and our children, and the sun is so essential for the growth of our bones and, you know, just the growth of our immune system. And all of this is really key. And there's been some studies done too where women who have been pregnant and kept under wraps, so to speak, and haven't had sun exposure, their children have a higher chance of developing juvenile diabetes. And much of the food system now is fortified with a type of a vitamin D. So it's a, you know, we're not necessarily seeing all the effects of it, but in, you know, the turn of the century, when a lot of children were migrating from rural areas into cities and stuff, and they were getting less sun exposure, I mean, there was a huge, huge issue with rickets, and that is lack of vitamin D, lack of sunshine. You know, there's just, of course, nobody wants a burnt baby ever, but there's a great way that we can interact with the sun and use it to nourish our babies and help them grow, which really that's all any parent wants, right, is just like this growing child. And so the sun is essential. And the other thing, too, is to look at the nature of your child, your baby, in general, how are children in the sun? I love the hours, you know, from dawn till noon is a great time to be out in the sun. And that's a great time. And it's kind of probably why a lot of cultures have siestas, too, because then in the afternoon you have a nice nap and you're inside. So the morning exposure is great. And also, you know, babies and children aren't lying out in the sun like I would. I'd love to get, you know, a lounger or put my, like, lie right on the grass and just lay there. But no child is just laying there. So sun exposure to the skin is a bit different. So I find you have to look at where the sun is hitting them. And it's sometimes just like shoulders and the nose, maybe the high part of the cheeks. So where they're out in the sun a lot, because often they're also just really looking down at like the grass and the bugs and or playing in the sand. And so obviously a hat is good, or you can just use the only sun protection to use is a natural product with zinc. And zinc is the only ingredient. It reflects the sun's rays. And so it sort of just sends them back. And so it's a natural sunblock. It's a mineral. I formulate one, and of course I'm putting that in a whole juicy botanical base with sun healing oils and essential oils and supercritical extracts that, you know, they're different than an SPF, because an SPF means it's a chemical, it's a word that's only for chemicals. So it's been measured and it can only apply to synthetic ingredients. But also other studies have done that show a correlation between a protective value with the botanical, like red raspberry seed oil, coconut oil, jojoba oil. All of these botanicals offer what I call harmonizing with the sun's rays. So they can extend your time in the sun, but they're not blocking. And then the issue with chemical sunscreens, which is practically, you know, everything out there, is they're just powerful free radical generators. They create cellular damage. They have gender-bending effects. The synthetic chemicals in them, like oxybenzene, are carcinogenic, especially when activated by sunlight, and the list goes on and on. And the thing is that you're absorbing the UV rays. You might not be getting burnt, but you're absorbing them, and it's making your cells react. And really, when you go into the studies, there's nothing that shows that sunblocks and sunscreens protect us from any of the dangers that we want to protect ourselves from with overexposure to sun. So there's a lot to undo there, because it's been, you know, heavily advertised and publicized for decades that that's what we need to do. And what's happening is when we're blocking those rays, we're blocking vitamin D production, which is essential on so many levels. You know that we have vitamin D receptors in like every part of our body. So that's so important. And because it's hard to get in food, and because it's not the same as that activation of the sun's rays meeting the skin. So saying that, I think you can tell that I'm passionate about that we need some sunshine. And of course, we don't want to overexpose or get burnt, but I think that's pretty easy to do. So again, Leaf would never wear a hat, and I could hardly even get my sunscreen on his nose because he would just take that towel and wipe it off. But I would just do a little tea on his nose and his cheeks, and put a shirt on him when I felt like it was too much. But I also just like love when he could just run around for those hours. And I found like he could really last for several hours without getting burnt. We rarely got, in Hawaii once he got too much sun. But when I'm at home in Canada in a Canadian summer, I don't even think about the sunscreen because just the way he's playing and the way he's moving through his day, he just doesn't get burnt. And I've also, you're able to build up that base tan, and that builds melanin and that protects us. And so that it's just really helpful for the sun.
Can you talk a little bit about what you're going to be addressing at our upcoming Longevity Now conference? The conference is happening Friday, May 3rd through May 5th. For those of you who are listening in, and we have an extraordinary lineup this year. Nadine briefly mentioned Dr. Hal Huggins, who is a pioneer in the world of dentistry, and he is going to be one of our keynote speakers and has such extraordinary information to share. And Nadine is going to be addressing skin cell mutation issues and how we can strengthen the skin, nourish it in a way to prevent those mutations from occurring. Can you talk a little bit about what you'll be covering?
Yeah, so I'm really going to go into sunlight and our health and, the truth and the myths surrounding sun damage, photo aging, hyperpigmentation, skin cell mutations. So we're going to set all those records straight. We're going to talk about wise ways to interact with the sun and, how to get that vitamin D in us, and what we need to take with the vitamin D to make it safe in our bodies, and just, the whole thing, and which really taps into, the deep health of our bodies and then a lot of the concerns we have around, our skin and aging and a lot of, like, things like liver spots and hyperpigmentation. So it's going to be a great talk.